Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Innal hamdalillah nahmaduhu wa nasta'inuhu wa nastaghfiruh wa na'udhu billahi min shururi anfusina wa min sayyiati a'malina. Man yahdihillahu fala mudilla lahu wa man yudlilhu fala hadiya lahu. Wa ashhadu an la ilaha illa Allah wahdahu la sharika lahu wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan 'abduhu wa rasuluh. Amma ba'd. In this last section inshallah of today's seminar, we're going to give you a smattering, inshallah, of mustalah, of hadith terminology. Before we start this hadith, why are we studying it? Firstly, we're not studying in great detail, so just why are we even mentioning it? Firstly, practical benefits. When you see a term sahih, why is it different from hasan? What is a sahih hadith? What is a hasan hadith? What is a da'if hadith? So it's a practical benefit, immediate practical benefit. Secondly, it shows you the preservation of the sunnah, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala really has preserved this sunnah by having these type of classifications, so that we know that this hadith is authentic and this hadith is not authentic, this hadith is mursal, mawdu', fabricated, whatever the case might be. Lastly, it shows you the great care and the great efforts that the scholars of the past have done in preserving the sunnah. Without a doubt, this science is unique in the history of mankind. Now, this is something that we say a lot, but not many people realize the repercussions of such a statement. The science of hadith, the preservation of hadith, is something that is unique. Never has it occurred in the past, and never will it occur again. It is of the miracles that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blessed the Muslim ummah with, and the scholars of the past have explicitly mentioned this, that Allah has honored the Muslims with, for example, the isnad system, the chain of narrators. If you open up Sahih Bukhari, you find a whole chain of narrators. This chain of narrators, Allah has honored the Muslims with it, that it didn't used to exist in the past. Okay, so we have to understand, this is one of the fundamental reasons that people fall into mistakes, because they don't understand this science. It's a unique science. You talk about chemistry, you talk about physics, you talk about anything, it existed. Yes, we've achieved, you know, lots of different ideas and new knowledge and everything, but the basis of those sciences existed. Geology, geometry, mathematics, everything, thousands of years. The science of hadith is something that is unique to the Muslims, and even that in the first few hundred years after this, after that, in our times we don't look at the isnad that goes back to the Prophet. No, after Bukhari wrote down his isnad, that's it, end of story. So if you like, for these 200-300 years, a unique phenomena occurred that did not occur ever before, and it never will occur. So this is why the average Muslim, he doesn't many times understand this, and so he falls into errors. The hadith have not been preserved. Likewise, the kuffar, when they usually attack Islam, they don't start with the Qur'an. Because they realize to attack the Qur'an is far more difficult. Even though they do attack it, they attack the sunnah. Because to attack the sunnah from their perspectives is easier. Because it's so confusing to many people. Not many people have studied the sunnah. Not many people have studied the science of hadith. And here I'll give you a general rule of thumb. Amazingly, when you this you will find without a doubt, every time, when a person attacks the sunnah, write this down, this is a general rule of thumb. He will be the most ignorant with regards to the sunnah. It's a general rule of thumb here. When the person attacks the sunnah, oh, how do you know it's been preserved? Or how do I know this hadith is sahih and da'if? That person would never in his life have opened up Sahih Bukhari and read it. He would never have studied the basic sciences of hadith, much less the advanced or the detailed ones. It's amazing, when a person tries to refute a theory, you will find him to be an expert on it. That's why he'll say, well, the first flaw is here, the second flaw is here, the third flaw is here. As for the people that reject the sunnah, especially amongst the Muslims, you find them to be the most ignorant with regards to the sunnah. So how can you speak about a subject that you have never even studied? Even Ibn al-Qayyim and other ulama, they mention those that deny the sunnah, they haven't even read Bukhari and Muslim. So they don't even know what they're denying. And the more you study the sunnah, the more you study the sciences of the sunnah and the hadith, the more your iman goes up that this science has been preserved. So understand this and realize it, and you can use this as a refutation of those that come to you. He who denies the preservation of the sunnah is the one who is ignorant of the history of the sunnah. It's that simple. Okay? So this is why this science is important for us to study, to appreciate, to realize the efforts the ulama have spent in compiling the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ and in categorizing them. Who is the first one ever to write about this science? The sciences of hadith we're talking about, not the hadith itself. Realize there's a difference. The first one to ever compile a book was a person by the name of, it's a complicated name, Arama Hurmuzi, who died in 360 Hijri. Does this mean that the sciences of hadith were unknown before this time, 360 Hijri? The answer is a resounding no. Even the scholars of the Sahaba and the Tabi'un and the Taba Tabi'un, they had the rudimentary sciences of hadith established. Ibn Sirin, for example, narrates, Ibn Sirin died 110 Hijri. He narrates, when the fitna broke out, we started asking the people, narrate to us where you heard it from. Before the fitna, we wouldn't ask them. In other words, before the fitna he's talking about is a big fight that occurred between the Muslims, a political thing that occurred in the later time of the Umayyad period. Okay, he's saying, before this fitna broke out, we would accept hadith from anyone. Because we trusted everyone. Everyone was innocent, naive at that time. Not naive, but they were, if you like, they weren't capable of lying about the Prophet ﷺ. The Tabi'un of that time. The Sahaba, of course, they were above this. But the Tabi'un. Then Ibn Sirin said, when the fitna broke out, when this political strife and struggle broke out, which is a different topic, after this we started asking the people, who narrated this to you? Where did you get this from? So this is the beginning of the science of Isnad. And Ibn Sirin died when? 110. When did he say this statement, the fitna? Some ulama say it was around the 60s of the Hijrah, 40s, 50s of the Hijrah. There's an ikhtilaf which particular fitna he's referring to. But within his life period, within his lifespan, that basically, very early on in the Muslim history, people started the science of Isnad. You say the Prophet ﷺ said it, who told you? Where did you get it from? Not only that, Ibn Sirin went on. He said, فَيُنظَرُ إِلَىٰ أَهْلِ السُّنَّةِ We would look at the person of Ahlul Sunnah and we would take his hadith. And we would reject the person of Ahlul Bid'ah and not accept his hadith. The Khawarij, the Shia, the Mu'tazila, those early groups that existed, they would not accept their hadith. Only the person from Ahlul Sunnah that was trustworthy, his hadith was accepted. So this is the basic science of Isnad. You know what the Isnad, which as we're going to talk about in detail, is the list of names. Okay, Imam Bukhari said, my Sheikh Abdullah ibn Yusuf said that, my Sheikh Imam Malik said that, my Sheikh Nafi' said that, my Sheikh Ibn Umar said that, the Prophet ﷺ said. This list of names is called an Isnad. When did it start? As soon as the Sahaba even were alive, but during the time of the Tabi'un. During the time of the Tabi'un. So we find that even though the sciences of Hadith were not written down until, let's say, 300 something Hijri, they were existent. And in fact, even if you look up, for example, Sahih Bukhari, you will find many chapters on narrating hadith. How to narrate them. What is the proper methodology of narrating them. Likewise, Imam al-Shafi'i, who was before Bukhari. Imam al-Shafi'i, he has many sections in his book, Al-Risala, dedicated to talking about the sciences of hadith. But the first one to write a separate book on the subject was this person by the name of Ar-Rama Hurmuzi, followed by a number of people. I have them mentioned in the flyer that's going to be handed out. Until finally, in the year 643 Hijrah, Ibn al-Salah, a famous alim of Damascus, came and he wrote a book which was so comprehensive and so unique that later on every single book would reference Ibn al-Salah's work. And Ibn al-Salah called it Al-Muqaddimah, the introduction. Okay, he called his work Al-Muqaddimah. Every single book that was to be written after Ibn al-Salah's work, basically it was either an explanation of his work, a condensation, a summarization, adding various points of Ibn al-Salah left out, okay, correcting mistakes. Everything was related to this book. That's how famous it became. So Ibn Kathir, the famous alim, came and he wrote Al-Ba'ith al-Hathith, Sharh Ikhtisar al-Ulum al-Hadith, which is related to Ibn al-Salah's work. An-Nawawi, the famous An-Nawawi, he has two works on Ibn al-Salah's book. Okay. Likewise, the Suyuti, he has the explanation of Ibn Salah's work, which is the one that is studied in University of Medina. It's a two-volume work on the explanation of An-Nawawi's explanation of Ibn Salah's work. Okay. The point is, Ibn Salah was the one who really defined the sciences of Hadith for later times, and he died 643. But he wasn't the one that invented it. It was invented, or it was it, the basis of it. It was existent since the time of the Sahaba. طيب, a question arises. Why is hadith preservation so different from that of the Qur'an? I mean, the Qur'an is clear, Fatiha Tanas, every Muslim agrees to it. So why is the hadith preservation different? The answer to this is that you have to look at it from a different perspective. That the Qur'an, the Prophet ﷺ ordered that every single verse be written down and he placed it in its proper place. He personally supervised the writing of the Qur'an. As for the Sunnah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala willed that it was not the case. That the Sahaba, no one ever supervised writing the Sunnah, and if you think about it, it's not possible. Why? Because the Prophet ﷺ is the living sunnah. You cannot write every single thing that he did. You see what I'm saying? The Prophet's life, ﷺ, eating and drinking and sleeping and going, this is the sunnah. How could the Sahaba write all of this? So you have to look at it from a different perspective. Once the Sahaba started narrating it, then later on, all of the fitnah and the trials and the turmoil of the Muslim Ummah occurred. People then, devious people, started fabricating a hadith in order to gain some type of acceptance amongst the people. So for example, the first movement that was to attack the Umayyads, okay, they fabricated hadith in favor of their particular tribe. That this tribe is the one that the Khalifa will come from. So they used this hadith in order to attack their opponents. And so fabrication of hadith started. Once fabrication started, not just that, but you had people that were not qualified to narrate hadith, narrating hadith. People with forgetful memories, people with weak memories. Once all of this started, the scholars of hadith needed to come forth with a set of rules, with a set of principles. How are we going to differentiate the weak from the authentic? How are we going to take what is correct and leave what is incorrect? Therefore, the science of hadith emerged and evolved as the times around it changed. So today, of course, it is a well-defined science which you study. Obviously, it is not a living science in the sense that most of this has already been done. You can't really change this science now. It was a science that was used at a certain time, and we use it in our times also, but we use it upon the hadith that are already present in the books, whereas the scholars of those times would use it in hadith that were still being circulated by word of mouth. This is the only difference. So inshallah, today we'll talk about the most important categorizations of hadith. I'm going to use the blackboard here. I hope everyone can see it. If not, then we won't use the blackboard. Tayyib, for any hadith to be considered sahih or authentic, it must meet 5 basic conditions. Before we get there quickly, we understood what the matan and the isnad is, right? Let me just write it like this, that actions are by intentions. This is a hadith that everyone knows. Actions are by intentions. This hadith is narrated by, who is it narrated by? Umar ibn al-Khattab. Okay? And it was narrated from Alqama. Okay? And so on and so forth, all the way down to, for example, Bukhari. This section of the hadith, I'm going to have to stand on one side, so I don't know. This section of the hadith which has the names, can you fix this so I can go further back? This section of the hadith which has the names is called the Isnad, which is a series of names going from whoever compiled the hadith, like Bukhari, Muslim, Abu Dawud, Tirmidhi, all the way to the companion, to the Prophet ﷺ, and that is the Isnad of the hadith. This section, let me write down, Isnad. This section of the hadith is the Matan, which is the actual text of the hadith. Okay. Now the scholars of hadith were interested in both the Isnad and the Matan. But in general, the Isnad is what primarily decides the authenticity of the hadith. The Isnad is the primary thing that you use to define the authenticity of the hadith. Because really, if you think about it, this is the crux here, this is the key here. Who told Bukhari this hadith? How was he? What was his memory like? Okay, what was his trustworthiness? Likewise, how about the one that narrated it to Bukhari Sheikh? All the way back to the Tabi'i, all the way back to the Sahabi, all the way back to the Prophet ﷺ. So this is the crux of the hadith. So the scholars therefore said that in order for any hadith to be accepted as sahih, it must meet 5 conditions, which is what we're going to talk about now. It must meet 5 basic conditions. The first condition is that it must have a continuous isnad, meaning no breaks in the isnad, no missing links in the isnad. So for example, if I come and I say that Abraham Lincoln said something, everyone's going to say, how did I get this information from? You were not alive when Abraham Lincoln spoke. Likewise, if a person narrates from someone that died before he was born, or that he never met, if he lived his life in Iraq, for example, and that sheikh lived his life in Mecca, and it was known that neither of them traveled, how did you get this information? So then this first condition will not be met. And we'll talk about that in detail, the types of da'if hadith related to the fact that a continuous isnad is not present. The second condition for a hadith to be considered authentic is that all of the narrators must be honest. By honest, I mean they must have integrity. For example, let me give you a practical example in our courts of law. Okay? The cop stands up to testify, and the criminal also stands up to testify. The criminal says, I didn't do it. The two cops say, I saw him do it. Who are you going to believe? And this criminal, for example, is a serial convicted criminal, so many crimes before. Who are you going to believe? The two cops. Why? Because they have established, well, technically they should have established, their reputation as being honest, upholding citizens of the law. Whereas this criminal, he is well known that he is an evil person. He is a liar. Or he is a thief, or he is whatever. We're not going to take from him. So we're talking here about the moral integrity. Is this person trustworthy to narrate hadith? Is he so unscrupulous that he will say a lie about the Prophet ﷺ, for example? This is what we're talking about here. In Arabic, we call it adala. Adala. So this is the second condition. The third condition is that the person must have precise memory. Now this is very important because this is different from the second condition. A precise and accurate memory. And in Arabic we call this ضبط. Okay, this is very important because you realize the scholars of hadith looked at two separate aspects of the person. Look at how careful they were. There's one thing, a person's honesty. But not every honest person has a good memory. Not every honest person even has the knowledge. And look at, for example, so many of the people in our times that are giving, lectures or whatever, or talking about Islam and giving fatwas, many of them might actually be sincere. It's not as if they are trying to misguide the people. But because they have never studied Islam, for example, or that they don't care to study it or whatever, they are actually giving wrong fatwas, wrong information. I think Islam says this. I think, the hadith is this. Such a person might not necessarily be evil, but because of his ignorance, or because of his inaccurate memory, or because he's not qualified, we cannot accept his statements. Likewise, the scholars of hadith looked at this aspect and they called it ضبط, precision in memory. He might be honest, but when he heard something, was he of a good memory that he could memorize it and then transmit it in the same way that he received it? So there are two separate things to look at the person. The fourth aspect is, and the fifth aspect or something that we're not going to go into too much detail because they're a bit more advanced, is that it does not contradict something stronger than it. In other words, a person who is an average guy, okay, I'll give you another practical example, is that a person says it's going to rain today, okay? You meet someone, for example, he is the weatherman of your locality or area. He tells you, no, I studied the issue, it's not going to rain today. Or inshallah, whatever his predictions are of that time. Or for example, you meet someone who says that so-and-so was in an accident. Then you meet a family member of that person. And he says, no, that wasn't the case. He wasn't in an accident. Here in this case, we have a person that might be honest and have integrity. He might even have a precise and accurate memory. But in this particular case, there was someone that was more knowledgeable than him, more accurate than him, that contradicted his statement. So in Arabic, we call this phenomenon shadh. Okay, basically a contradict something that was more stronger than it. Don't write of the conditions you have to be shadh. No, the conditions is you don't have to be. Yani it's not allowed. No shudud is the Arabic word for the plural. No shudud. Okay, however you want to write that. Don't write shadh because shadh is not the condition you need to have. It's the condition you don't need to have. Okay. Questions later on, inshallah, about this. The fifth criterion is that there are no other hidden defects. Hidden defects. In other words, apparently the isnad might be very correct. You can't find any discrepancy in it. But when you study this hadith and you compare it to other ahadith, you find a hidden defect in it. And that is called in Arabic, illah. So of the conditions is that there is no illah. Okay. Now these four and five are a bit more advanced, but understand these three at least, and we're going to discuss briefly the four and five. The first condition, once again, was that you have a continuous link, no breaks in the chain. Second condition is that the honesty and integrity of the person must be firmly established. The third condition is that not just his honesty and integrity, but also his precision in memory, his sharpness of memory must also be established. The fourth condition is that it cannot contradict something stronger than it. And the fifth condition is that it cannot have any hidden defects. Now, briefly, quickly, we're going to go over 10 or 15 terms. So, whoever wants to take notes, better write quickly. And those that are not, inshallah, it's really, as long as you understand these 5 points, that's the most important thing. But so that you are a bit more, a bit more detailed, we want to go a bit more detailed about the various types of da'if hadith, what happens when a chain breaks or whatever. We're going to talk about a few of the more important terms. Okay, so a continuous isnad. What happens when you don't have a continuous isnad? The general term when you don't have a continuous isnad is munqatir. In other words, it's broken. Munqatir. When Adam says the hadith is munqatir, it means that somewhere in the chain, there is a missing link. Where is it? We don't know when he says munqatir. It's a general term. Suppose it was the Sahaba that was missing, the Sahabi himself. For example, Wahab ibn Munabbih, the student of Abu Huraira, said, the Prophet ﷺ said. So the Tabi'i narrates directly from the Prophet ﷺ. We don't know the name of the companion. In this case, this is Mursal. Now we know the missing link, where it is. Mursal is the strongest da'if hadith. Do you understand? Strongest da'if in the sense that all of the other da'if hadith are considered of a lesser category. But it's still da'if. But the strongest of them, even all of the da'if hadith, they, relatively speaking, you can categorize them. The strongest of them is the Mursal. Why is this? Because the Sahaba, obviously, are of the highest level. They can never lie or say anything, mistakenly. So the fact that they're missing in the chain is the weakest type of missing link. Whereas, for example, if a later person were missing, that person might even be a liar. That person might be a person that is rejected by the scholars of hadith. So, but a mursal hadith still is a da'if hadith, but it is the strongest type of da'if hadith. Suppose the person that was missing was at the bottom of the chain, like Bukhari's sheikh, for example. Okay, or more than his sheikh. Yani basically, the missing links occurred right at the bottom of the chain. The person that is above the person narrating, like Bukhari, Muslim, Abu Dawud. In this case, we call it mu'allaq. Mu'allaq, which means suspended. It's as if the hadith is suspended because it's above the person. He can't really. It's like suspended above him because the sheikh above him has not been mentioned. So it's mu'allaq. It's suspended there. Anytime there are two consecutive missing links. For example, Imam Malik says that the Prophet ﷺ said. Imam Malik didn't even meet any of the Sahaba. Imam Malik narrates from the Tabi'in who narrate from the Sahaba who narrated from the Prophet ﷺ. So there's two people missing here. Anytime there's two or more consecutive people missing, then we call it mu'dal. Mu'dal, which means like confused. Like this hadith is confused because it is it is confusing in the sense that there are two people missing, we don't know who they are. Okay? These are the main types of da'if hadith related to the first condition. The most common term is munqati', which means the break is anywhere. If the break is that of the Sahaba, we call it mursal. If the break occurs at the bottom of the chain, we call it mu'allaq. If the break occurs two people consecutively or more, we call it mu'dal. And obviously, mu'dal is of the weakest of the da'if hadith because there's two people missing. Two generations, maybe 80-year gap in the chain. All of these are da'if hadith. There is one more category in this. It is called mudallas. Now this is, we need to go a little bit more into detail here. Mudallas means that you're not sure that the person actually heard it from his sheikh. You're not sure that the person actually heard it from his sheikh. Certain people were known to practice this act called tadlis. What is tadlis? Tadlis means narrating on behalf of someone whom you never met. Pretending as if you met him. Pretending not as a lie, but it seems like that. Let me give you an example. For example, one of the ulama of our time, Shaykh al-Albani, rahimahullah. Me personally, I never met him. If I were to say, Shaykh al-Albani said, then I am not actually narrating something I heard. It is something maybe from a cassette or a book or something. So if someone were to narrate this, I don't have a direct isnad. You cannot take this as a direct link. We lived at the same time, there's a possibility that we met, but I didn't meet him. Some of the scholars of the past and some of the narrators of hadith, they fell into a mistake. It's not a sin, it's a mistake known as tadlis, in which they would narrate the hadith in such a fashion that people presumed that the person had met, but in reality he had not met. So that's why it is called mudallas. How do we know this? We have to look up this narrator. Was he known for tadlis or not? If he was known, then in that case, we consider the hadith mudallas, again with many conditions, which we're not going to get into right now. Okay, that was the first condition for a hadith being sahih, that it must have a continuous chain. The second condition was what we called adala, which was what? Integrity and honesty. Suppose the person did not have integrity, he was not honest. In that case, depends on what he was. If he was a liar, if he was a fabricator of hadith, the hadith is known as mawdu'. Mawdu' means the hadith is fabricated. We know for a fact, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that this hadith is not authentic. It is never, the Prophet ﷺ never said it. How do we know this? Because one of the narrators did not have adala. He was accused of lying. Suppose he wasn't accused of lying, but he was accused of being a major sinner. Okay? For example, he would drink, he would womanize, whatever. In this case, such a hadith becomes da'if jiddan. Da'if jiddan. We cannot accept it, and it's not just da'if, it's very weak. Da'if jiddan means very weak. When is it mawdu'? If the narrator is a liar. He's known to lie in the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. When is it da'if jiddan? When his adala is not met, but he's not a liar. When he is not a good Muslim, but we don't know him to lie. So we can't say it's mawdu'. So we say it's one category above that. So we say it is da'if jiddan. By the way, you should know that mawdu' has a number of synonyms to it for practical purposes. Batil. Okay, if you hear a scholar say this hadith is batil, basically it is synonymous with mawdu'. Also the phrase, it has no basis. La asla lah. This hadith has no basis. Also is a synonymous with mawdu'. And other phrases too. Basically, this category means you know for sure that someone fabricated this hadith and pretended it was a hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. So this is the... Oh, and there's one more thing, yes. Suppose the person is unknown who he is. For example, one person will say, Amr narrated to me that his father said that the Prophet ﷺ said. We don't know who Amr is, we don't know who his father is. He mentioned the name. He said the name of the person, Amr ibn Abdullah maybe, okay? But we don't have any biographical information about this person. In other words, his status is unknown. Also, this hadith will be considered weak. There is no special term for it. You just say da'if here. There's no special term that you use here. But if the person, we say in Arabic, is majhul, he is unknown. So when you don't have any information about the person, and this, by the way, is not as common as you would think. Amazingly, of the miracle of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, most of the narrators of hadith, you have detailed biographies about them, as we're going to mention in a short while, inshaAllah. Okay? But the point is, this majhul, it affects the adala. Why? Because when you don't know somebody, you don't know what his character is. You don't know whether he's good or bad Muslim. So therefore, we consider it as one of the... If this is not met, then the hadith will also be considered da'if.